You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody out there in the niche? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, June 5th. I'm trying to fast forward. June 5th, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joe O'Brien.
It's old Troy LaValle.
You got nothing today. Nothing.
Yeah, I didn't even do it right.
We are recording late today, a little behind-the-scenes look, because Troy's had some technical difficulties. What, you had no internet? You had to have an internet guy come out?
Dude, I don't think I told you the full story, right? So we spent the night in the city Friday night, you and I, and we'll tell that story, I'm sure, throughout the show. But I get a text from my wife, and the second I leave the house for a trip, it's usually like, oh, the roof caved in, the house burned down. All our children have been kidnapped. In this case, it was Saturday when I wake up in a little bit of a stupor. And she's like, the internet's out. The fuck? And we've had a lot of power outages in our neighborhood. But I was like, motherfucker. God. And like, it's Saturday morning. The kids can't watch like a little bit of TV while my wife's trying to like juggle three kids. And I'm like, all right, I'm coming home. And I come home. I like unplug the router. I like reset the ONT box. I'm online like sleuthing how to do it. And I'm like, something's just fucked up. I'm spending all this time doing it. I'm like, I don't want to lose all my Christmas shows if I reset my box. And
That's ridiculous.
Let me go outside. So I go outside and I open up like the Verizon box and there's like a bunch of shit in there, like little shavings of something. What the fuck did this get in there? It looked like something crawled in and like chewed the wire. It's like, God damn it all. So this was Saturday. I call Verizon and I'm like, I need a technician after like an hour and a half of them being like, have you tried this? Have you tried this? They're like, well, it seems like it's something that's totally our fault. So we'll send somebody out and charge you $100 for it. I'm like, no, you won't. No, you won't. But I'm sure if you can get somebody out today, we can talk. And they're like, yeah, no, earliest appointment is Tuesday. So that's today. And so, meanwhile,
this day and age, I consider that no different than it being like January 14th and your heater going down and you calling somebody and be like, we'll be there in 3 days. Like, to me, the 3 days without the internet is that's just criminal. It's criminal.
I mean, dude, it's lucky that all I had to record was fodder because I would have thrown off so many people's schedule.
Totally.
Our scheduling, I mean, you open up our shared calendar. It's just a fucking disaster. If one person has to like reschedule, it's like, oh boy. So I really lucked out in that. I mean, yesterday I worked from a cafe. You and I had a 2-hour budget meeting. I'm like talking in a bar cafe. Anyways, so 24 hours later, so Sunday morning, Yeah, so that was Saturday morning. Monday, my wife's like, hey, did you go? I was showing Archer the box. Did you go check in there? There's like a bunch of shit in there. I'm like, no, I cleared that out. She goes, you should go look. So I opened it up. More shit in there. Like a brand new nest had been built in there.
What
the fuck is going on? So the guy shows up today. They're like, we'll have
country
a guy.
Living.
We'll have a guy there between 10 and 12. So at 11:58. He rolls up and
you said this to me yesterday. You're like, let's record fodder at 12 because the guy's coming at 10. And I'm like, a little bit later, it comes out that he said 10 to 12. And I'm like, Troy, that means he's going to get there at 11:58.
I know.
And you're like, nah, I don't know, maybe. And I'm like, no chance.
I was being optimistic.
Yeah.
But the guy came and I'm like, he's pulling up and he comes to the house. I'm like, I think I've diagnosed the problem. And he's like, oh yeah, it's fucking mice. The mice just find a way in there. And he's like, I'm going to take this whole thing off. I'm going to put one of our new boxes called a flat box because this happens everywhere. Like fucking little critters crawl up in there. And he's like, I'll climb a pole working on like a box on a telephone pole. We'll open it up, like 100 mice babies will fall out. Like, how the hell did they get up there? I'm like, your job sounds terrible. But anyways, he installs a flat box, like boom, the whole house lights up. Alexa's like, what's going on, motherfuckers? And we're back, baby.
We're back. We got a pod ready for you. Troy's in operating order, and we've got news today. We've got an exciting look at episode 37 of Campaign 2.
Precepts.
An episode that had it all. And then Chunky.
We had it all.
Chunky, we are stupid. It's including like for one of the first times truly ranging into areas that we are stupid about that have nothing to do with Pathfinder rules, which is very interesting.
Well, just stupid about life.
Just stupid about life.
Wow.
And then, of course, listener mail, we'll have a few good ones there. All right, let's get into the news. News today. Wow, what a weird stream coming this week. Today. Weird stream today. If you're listening to this early, before 11 a.m. Eastern time, I am going to be live on our Twitch channel today, 11 a.m. Eastern, making digital miniatures on Hero Forge of iconic GCN characters. What? This is all part of the ramp up to the gauntlets that we talked about. We've been talking about for a couple weeks. Gauntlets at Gen Con. Gauntlets are going to be play iconic GCN characters in intense 45-minute to an hour encounters. And they are, we are going to build custom minis for these iconic characters. And so this was McD's idea. McD was like, you know what? You have to do it anyway. Why don't you do it with the Naish and with some of the people that created these characters so they could like weigh in on it. So that's what we're doing today, 11 o'clock. If you're listening to this later and you missed it, go back and watch it on the Twitch VOD. It'll be available there. I can only imagine it's going to be a really, really fun time. We are Skid's coming by, Matthew's coming by, Kate's coming by, should maybe awesome. See a little bit of Jared. I mean, it's going to be a really fun few hours of just people weighing in on what they want their character to look like. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, and this is for the gauntlets at Gen Con. We're going to be running gauntlets at the Nashville retreat, but it's like you said, that's spring training. Like that is just going to be intense. Yeah,
it's not going to have those minis yet. That's in like it's like 3 weeks, dude.
We can talk about that too. But at Gen Con, I've just approved the plans for the booth. I mean, we're still working out the ins and outs, but the booth is so fucking cool.
Cool.
If this looks anything like the mock-up, I'm going to shit my pants when I see it. But for the gauntlets that we're running there, we're working on getting terrain, and we want to get these physical miniatures for people to be able to use when they play as Baron or Lork or any of these characters. So you're gonna build them. I mean, this is McD, great idea by McD. He's like, why don't you just make this into content? We got to do it anyways. All right.
Yeah, it's great. And I'd love, I made one trying it out. I actually made Atticus. There are a gajillion options. So it'll be really great to have not only the people that created the characters, but also the Naish that in some cases knows the character better than the people that created them.
That's true.
To kind of weigh in with ideas about what's the pose? What's the face look like? What are they wearing? What's in this hand? What's in that hand? Just really fun stuff. So that's today, 11 a.m. Eastern on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/theglasscannon.
And I think only 6 gauntlets are still available.
Six tables still and have seats.
Yeah. And I mean, those tables only have a couple seats each. I want to say, yeah, we just sold out of a Matthew one on Sunday.
All the Sunday gauntlets
are sold out. And then I think. Yeah, I mean they're going fast. I talked about last week maybe adding some extra players. I haven't added those people yet. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But I think these gauntlets are going to be really, really fun, and we're trying to make it into an experience, something that's unforgettable.
Awesome. Yeah. Continuing on the streaming train tomorrow, Thursday, I'm going to jump back on to continue my playthrough of Control. It has to happen. The last time I stopped playing Control, I think it was about 3 weeks ago. We've done 2 weeks of Helldivers, which has been really, really fun. But I remember when I logged off of that stream, somebody in chat said something that really stood out to me because I was in this really weird maze-like part of the game, and I'm getting close to the end. And I'm moving through this like house, it almost looks like, but the walls keep shifting, and I kept walking in circles. I couldn't quite figure it out. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go, guys. I'm over time anyway. I got to get out of here. And there was one comment that really jumped out at me. And it was like, definitely do not play this game anymore without streaming it at, from this moment on. And
oh, really?
I was like, okay, that really jumped out at me. And I was like, all right, I promise. Like, I won't turn it on. And I have not. And I am going to continue from there. We're getting end game now tomorrow on Thursday.
Oh, no shit.
Tomorrow. Yeah. On Twitch. So that will be
at noon. I got a twitchy eye right now. Unrelated to your control talk.
You got that twitchy eye? Yeah, it's so
it's
weird.
It's just the left eye, and it's like keeps vibrating. Happening. I guess it's stress, but I feel pretty cool.
You look cool.
I feel cool.
I can't see it
sometimes. I'm like, it's just this like, I'm sorry. I have to leave fodder. I can't
do this anymore. So that's the streaming news. Also, we're going to have a YouTube premiere tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern.
Yes.
Glass Cannon Live Vancouver.
Vancouver!
The Vancouver show will be live tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on YouTube. That's tonight, Wednesday, June 5th. If you missed that, you can check that out on YouTube. And then, oh, last piece of news here before we get into the episode that I have. I'll kick it to you if you have something else.
Yeah.
We're about to head to Denver and Nashville. Those are our next shows in a few weeks here. And McD told me right before I went live here that he has two open spots for merch team in Denver. Nashville is full, but Denver, there's two people. If you want a free VIP ticket to the show and you want to volunteer for merch, hit us up. Email
us. I think VIP is sold out, right? Is it? I'm not sure.
Yeah, VIP I think is sold out. So if you want a freebie, if you want to get in, if you already bought GA and you just want to get bumped up and hang out with us a little bit, please volunteer for merch. Help us out. That would be awesome. By the way, Denver, nice work. Started out slow, sold out VIP.
So love VIP. Awesome. It's a big theater and it's a Thursday night. You know, we're really rethinking these Thursday nights. They allow us to do two shows in a week, but they're tough sells. I'm giving you a pass, Denver, because I assume that's the only reason we're not, these tickets didn't fly off the shelves. I mean, it's over 200 people. It'd be nice if we could get like another 100
in there. That's great. Over 200 people. We were there last year. We got sold out VIP. That's the biggest thing. It's
Tennessee's
like,
close.
When we have a packed VIP, it's awesome. It's awesome.
It'll be good. Yeah,
anyway, two spots to bump up if you want them, if you want to come and help us out with merch. It's always a blast. It's going to be a fun time. Our production coordinator, Michael's going to be there. It's going to be awesome. He was just in St. Paul working with the merch team. So anyway, it'll be great. Let's get into GCP episode 37.
We got more news. It's also Pride Month.
Oh, yes. We got stuff coming for this.
Pride Month. You know, we always celebrate it here at the Glass Cannon Network. We actually have new merch coming out soon for Pride Month, which is great. We got a new t-shirt, a dad hat, and a pin, a really sick Pride pin.
Yeah,
and,
loving the pin.
Portion of those proceeds go to the Trevor Project. That's been sort of our charity du jour. When I was working for Getty Images, I'd never heard of the Trevor Project. I would get sent to like events all over New York, and they'd be like celebrity events or whatnot. And oftentimes I'd be working on site backstage, and the producer would just be like running cards to me, and I'd be uploading the footage, cutting together EPKs. And for that particular one, I had like a lot of downtime. So I was like sitting there listening to all these stories and like listening to the event. It really moved me. And so when we started selling this Pride merch, we kind of chose the Trevor Project as our charity du jour and just sort of stuck with it. So that'll be exciting. But you know, one thing I was thinking about, I always have this like, what do you want to call it? Like a conundrum every June 1st. Cause I like when we switch our logos over to the Pride logo, but it's also become sort of memeified at this point where like people are like, oh, here come all the corporations switching over to the Pride logo. And so, you know, the reason we always do it is for me, it's like we're planting a flag. It's like letting just a reminder, letting people know that like this is a safe place. This is a place where everyone is accepted. Everyone is loved. And, you know, so it's important. I think it can sometimes be seen as like a hollow, toothless gesture, but it's important, to let people know that like everyone is welcome here in the nation. Everyone is, loved. And so that's why we switch all those logos over. It's just a little reminder, just like a little flag of, hey, everything you are well loved here. You know, and I it always bums me out. The conundrum I have is I have to shut off comments when we switch these over. In 2024, I still have to shut off comments because it just, it turns into a thing, and I don't want any of that shit. It kind of goes against the purpose of letting people know that, like, hey, safe place here. So if you are a member of the Nage that isn't down with Pride, you should listen to your pal Jesus. He's a cool dude. Love everyone means love everyone. You'll get to pick and choose. So happy Pride Month to all our LGBTQ folks and allies.
Yes, happy Pride Month. Very excited to see some of that new merch. My Pride hat was one of my favorite hats for a very, very long time. I wore it until it so stained because it was white. And so it was just like so it succumbed to the sweat earlier.
Yeah. Than white normal. Hats are tough. White hats are tough.
And it was a great summer hat. And so I'm glad we got some more back in the dad hat version this time. So anyway,
yeah.
Let's talk GCP episode 37 of campaign 2. Love this ep. Trying to think of a way to kind of sum it up quickly. And at Jules Kindred Blair did it great for me on YouTube. Great for me. I just copied it, pasted it, put it right in my show notes. All it simply says is character work, action, RPG mechanics, hilarity, bottle caps, perfect GCP episode.
Beats Battlestar Galactica.
Beats Battlestar Galactica. It was great. It had everything. It had all of those things. So the whole first half exactly is the introduction of a new character, role play, and then we cross over into total mechanics, a really fun fight, and finally one where we feel a little bit better about our mechanics, about our strategies, about tactics. Our execution, tactics. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. Anyway, in summary, I really enjoyed it. I've just got a couple things here, nothing really major. I wanted to ask you about the introduction of Matthew's new character, your involvement in it, how much did you guys talk about it? And really the main thing I want to know that's specific is the Gatewalker element. Is this something that came up in a conversation at all between you two? Either the option of not being a Gatewalker, or was it that he had to be a Gatewalker? Was that discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said in an early episode, or maybe even during one of the character introduction videos, that like if someone dies, I really want them to come back as a Gatewalker. I just think that the overall experience of the adventure path will be much richer if everyone is a Gatewalker. And also the beauty of this path is that anyone there are Gatewalkers all over the world. You know, some have joined the consortium of EPOPs, and some are just wandering, like Asta, or in this case, Barnes. And like, to me, I just feel like, yes, it can be convenient to have a Gatewalker just sort of roll in, but the fact that they exist, let's just get them in there. You know, one of the things about Strange Aeons that was so tough is that like, as people died, they weren't coming back as one of Lowell's workers. And I was like, you know, like with Sir Julie, I was like, really would be better if she worked for Lowell's and Matthew was against it. So I kind of like, I told him, I was like, I really wanted to be a Gatewalker, but he wanted that too. So it worked out well, but that's kind
of
my.
Great. So neither of you, it was never really an option. Neither of you wanted it at all to explore not being a Gatewalker in this. Very cool. Did he talk to you about class or anything like that? We still haven't been revealed. I mean, I know what it is because of mechanically I know, but he hasn't said it yet. Did he talk to you about it ahead of time? Did you guys strategize on tactics at all in terms of party comp?
The day that we recorded, we were supposed to record more episodes, but when Talitha died, you know, it sucked. We really needed those episodes because of like summer vacations and shit. I could just see it on Matthew's face. He wasn't ready. You know, even though I tell everybody I always prepare their backups, it's just like, it's just a thing I say and no one really does it. I could see him feeling like, I don't want to just make a hasty decision here. So we took it. I said, let's take five, take 10. And then we came back. I said, how you feeling? He's like, I said, all right, well, let's come back next week and do it. Give you some time. And then I left him alone. And then maybe 4 or 5 days later, he emailed me. He was like, thank you so much for giving me that time. I really got a chance to, because we were spitballing like ideas aloud and both like to the side after Talitha died, like, well, you could be this, you could be that. And he's like, And then after he had some time to think about it, he sent me an email. He's like, all right, so here's what I'm thinking.
Was there a seed of his current character in any of those early ideas that he was throwing out? Or did this really originate once he left the studio and had time?
it originated, I think it originated once he left. There might have been like some scant sort of like small little connections.
But nothing you really recognized.
Yeah. And even still, like, he had an idea that I was like, it's not going to work because of this, this, and this. I said, you could try this or you could try this. And then he went a different way. But there was one thing in particular about the timing. Like, in his mind, he wanted – am I saying too much here? No, I don't think so. In his mind, he wanted Barnes to like have walked through the gate.
The like, moment before.
Like, he no, asked, shortly after you guys walked through. So it's like you guys walked through and you're like, oh, let's walk that way. He wanted to walk through right after and then just kind of stumble upon you. And I was like, the way it's intended is you would have walked through a couple months ago. And so you've been living here for a couple months. And let's talk about that. And so I told him some things that you guys don't even know. You know, well, without giving any spoilers, you'll see that come to play in this week's episode a little
bit. No, but he said it. He said it in this week's episode. He's very clear that, like, he knows about these golem-y sounding sort of
guardians.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And he says that he approached it and that they shoot him away. And so, like, it's cool when a GM can give one player some details to kind of transmit to the other players. You know, bring in a new character, it makes them seem knowledgeable, and, you know, they've already scouted the region, and that's kind of a fun thing to do sometimes.
I just finished watching Tamara's episode, and so he mentioned it again, and so I wanted to make sure that he actually had mentioned that.
Yeah. So there's stuff that we I feel like we did back in the Jade Regent days and before that in our other campaign days that I might have done once or twice in Giant Slayer, but then we stopped once we were all plugged in and hooked into like headphones and mics and we were all on the same. And that was players leaving the room. Like while one player or a player in the GM leaving the room together to discuss something that the other players don't know about. That's something that I got to experience again when I was playing with the Order of the Amber Die this year again. Like somebody will walk into a room or decide to do something in town and the GM will take them out of the room.
Yeah.
And they'll be gone for 15 minutes, you know, and we're all just hanging out. And then when they come back, what I love about that is you get the translation of whatever the narrative is or whatever the GM was intending. You don't really know because it's a game of telephone. It comes to you through a player. The GM is saying nothing. So like you're taking their word for whatever it is that they saw. And from there, you have to kind of plan. And it leaves the GM out of it, which feels much more organic. It's a really fun way to transmit information is tell one player and have them tell the other players. You know?
Well, using the lighting the way we're using it in Foundry VTT, that's started to happen already where it's like someone will open a door and be like, oh, no, and you can't see it.
You're right.
Like, what do you say? What? It's like arms. I see arms, a leg.
It's a very cool aspect of a Foundry that I dig. in our play style now. Because you come around that corner, you're just like, what is this? Speaking of horrifying looking creatures, what in the hell? Talk to me about the pacing in the episode as you saw it. So we're, 45, 50 minutes in, roughly. And the role play seems to be winding down. That is the role play of the introduction of the new character. That seems to wind down and you call for a break. When we come back shortly after, we've rested and we're on our way to head toward the vernacular. And you throw in this encounter. Talk to me about what's going on in your head. Did you know before that episode started that that encounter would be in the episode? Or did you think there was a possibility it was a full role play episode? How did it pace out in your mind?
No, it's actually one of the reasons that I did what I – another one of the reasons that I did what I did last week because I didn't want to go straight from the snail fight to this other fight. And I also didn't want to cut the fight because I felt like it was a good chance to give the heroes a moment of like, all right, we still got this.
Yeah.
It's a much easier encounter. So I did want to leave that in there as a sort of confidence boost.
Yeah.
But I didn't – it would have felt really hollow if it happened right after last week's episode. So that was one of the main reasons that led me to doing last week that flashback and all that so that we could at least have a week between that and this. Now, when it started – I didn't know if we'd make it through the episode or not. Like, I kind of wanted to have the whole fight happen. And as it started to rock and roll, I was like, okay, it looks like they have this in hand. Great. You mentioned at the beginning, like, it's always a great episode when you got a little bit of, you got the role play, you got the backstory, you got the this and a fight. In an ideal world, that would be every episode. But without, like, really forcing it, you just kind of have to take them as
they
come.
Yeah, and tough encounters go long. You know, they tend to go long. And so, but then you have some encounters that wrap up in a nice, neat little tie it in a bow fashion. And a lot of times that comes down to how the dice roll. And that'll take me to Junk Bucket 50's comment on the episode, which was, are we sure Asta is a fox? Because this episode, she sure seemed like a goat. And it really was too. Crits from Asta, massive crits that have directly led to wiping out these two creatures. She was the MVP of the fight this week, but it's very interesting for me because, like, all right, so the combat starts and you have this. Talk me through what you're thinking when you have hidden enemies approaching the PCs, and you decided to go with a perception DC as opposed to us rolling perception. What makes you think that? Talk us through the idea for how to start the encounter.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, I mean, with 2E as opposed to 1E, you don't get that surprise round, you know, as written. And so the way that I was looking at it, I'm trying to remember because we recorded this a little while ago, but like their whole jam, let's bring up their stat here.
They're stealthy.
And the adventure intends for them to approach from like stealth and from cover. And so what I thought I would do is just have everybody roll the perception, and those who failed the perception would be flat-footed to them if they acted before them in the round because they were sneaking up. And so they didn't see them yet, whereas the other people did. Whereas other people who succeeded on the perception, regardless of where they go in the initiative, they wouldn't be flat-footed. And so that was just to like add a little extra wrinkle into the beginning of the fight.
Cool. And then they come out and I mean, is there anything you want to say about them before we move into We Are Stupid in terms of they were kind of weird and kind of cool. They had an AOE fire. Wait, it was a targeted fire blast ability or what? No, it was like anything adjacent to them, wasn't it?
Yeah, they released a burst of explosive gases in all directions, dealing 3d6 fire to all creatures in a 5-foot emanation. And it resets every 1d4 rounds. So it's something that could, with good rolling, happen a lot. But I don't think I don't remember getting it off a ton. The real big thing about them is these poisonous like pustules on them.
Yeah. Yeah, of which Barn succumbs. And this is a big part of the end of the episode that is going to carry into next week. It's like, let's not forget, we're very excited that Asta critted that second one down, but Barnes is poisoned. This is an issue. Barnes, who, and this was funny, Matthew experienced something that I've experienced multiple times. I think all of us have been in that situation one time or another. You bring in your new, cool, scarred, warrior, badass character and then just fail, fail, fail every roll out of the gate. And so their first impression to the rest of the PCs is just like, this guy's incompetent. Like, I promise you he's not. He's really cool. He's really strong.
I found that what I was looking for here. So as written, it says, when the characters first arrive, one hides, capital H, in the vines at the base of a tree near the top of the hill. The other hides, capital H, in the bushes down near the bottom. So in order to rectify that, I was like, oh, let's roll a perception against their...
No. They rolled stealth against our perception DC.
Because I knew that we were about to get into a fight. So like... How is the benefit of the hide actually going to matter in this? Because we don't really use exploration. And, so that was the way I rectified it. And I think I've done this before on Strange Aeons, and I like it because it's kind of reminiscent of the, surprise round in 1E.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you that, that little benefit. All right. Let's take it into We Are Stupid. Professor Eric wrote a treatise this week. And I loved it. It was a good one. Let's get into it.
We are stupid.
Thank you, Nicholas, for reminding us via song. All right. So I'm going to start off with early on, before we got into the encounter, kind of around the campfire during this whole role play situation. Sydney brought up, it was actually kind of after that when we were waking up, Sydney brought up that she had another spell book. And we discussed, is she able to just prepare those spells as if they're, is she, could she just add them to her list? And I said, well, you need to learn a spell, which is like you need to copy it from a source. It costs money, materials, whatever, and you have to make a roll. And so Professor Eric says that's absolutely right. However, there's this other thing that she can do. And I never heard of this before. And this it's called borrow a spell. Capital B, capital S. Borrow a spell action. I missed this. I don't know how I missed this, but it is specifically this. The ability allows you to prepare to attempt to prepare a spell from someone else's spell book. That is specifically what it's for. And basically what it is it works mechanically like learning a spell, except you have to roll just to prepare it. And if you fail, you can't prepare it that day. But you don't lose the slot or anything. You can still prepare one of your spells you already know. So it's really not that detrimental to attempt. It's kind of risk-free. And Professor Eric's take on it is that it's an interesting idea. However, it seems very tedious. Like, to do, if you had to do this day in and day out, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to prepare three spells from the spell book. And every day in your session, you're rolling a check against a certain DC against the rank of the spell to see if you got it into your prepared spells or not. Mm-hmm. Just seems kind of tedious. But, you know, he doesn't have any added ideas, but he's like, he would love to streamline it in some way because it seems a little bit, like I said, tedious. But I didn't know that that existed. So anyway, that's an interesting rule that Sydney can take advantage of if she would like. Let's get into the non-rules. We are stupid. This is fantastic. Yeah. Professor Eric, this is why I love Professor Eric. Last week, sits down, listens to an entire episode of us just doing dramatic improv together, doing nothing about the game of Pathfinder, and he works his way through the whole thing. This time, he's taking time to add in to our concepts of constellations and viewing stars, as it would be, perhaps, on another planet. Now, this is what's tricky. He says, this is awesome. Now, first of all, I'm just going to say this up front. He has a he had a planetary sciences double major when he was in school. Planetary sciences double major. So this is where this comes from. Credible source. He says, not really a rules thing, but the constellations would not look different if you were on Castrovel versus Galarian. Basically, anywhere within the solar system would see the exact same constellation shapes.
That's interesting.
Yes, there will be seasonal aspects for which constellations are visible and when they're behind the sun. Yes, the southern and northern hemispheres have a similar change in constellation in when constellations are visible, but the shapes of the constellations don't change. As long as you're within the solar system, the planetary distances are practically nothing compared to the interstellar distances involved in all points. And all points in the solar system are practically identical.
Wow.
So that's a very interesting thing. You could say, like, the stars do not look different. You would have to travel to another part of the galaxy, basically, in order to see different constellations.
That's cool.
Yeah. Never really realized that, but it makes perfect sense to me that planetary distances are infinitesimal relative to interstellar distances. So it makes a lot of sense. He's like, they would look exactly the same. So, in other words, we still don't know where the hell we are. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, it gives us no goddamn information. Troy's being all tight-lipped about it. It has been a struggle. So anyway, we'll figure out more as we go. But thank you for that, Professor Eric. I love science. Okay, so this goes back to what you said about the hide action. Professor Eric just wants to remind the casual viewer, initiative order does not control flat-footed slash off-guard unless there is a class feature in play or a monster feature in play, like the rogue's surprise attack. However, characters are off-guard against creatures that are hidden from them. Like you said, they had used the hide action.
Yeah.
He said it just sounded a little bit in the episode like those two concepts were getting a little conflated. But just so everybody's clear, it does not work like it did in 1E. If you haven't acted yet, you are not off guard. However, if you want to make it because they failed a perception roll in the first round, they're off guard. That makes perfect sense to me as a situational circumstance penalty that you would find yourself in.
I mean, I just feel like otherwise there's no point for them to hide. You know what I mean? Like, even if we're using exploration mode, them hiding is like, oh, you see him. Like, there's no benefit. The whole point of hiding is that you get to attack from hiding.
Well, they would get concealment. So if you have brush and you successfully hide, people can still know where you are, but you would all of a sudden successfully get a DC 11 flat check against you, which I think is way better than like a point of cover or 2 points of cover, right? So like having that hide work turns you into a DC 11 flat check, which would be huge. But anyway, would love comments on that. I think that the hide action is great for that, but I see what you're saying. At the start of combat, it makes it a really fun.
Concealment's cool, too. I just like the idea of them coming out.
Yeah, that's very scary.
If you saw them, then you don't take that penalty. That's interesting, though.
Yeah, it is interesting. All right, so let's talk about this Fire Blast ability. So Professor Eric points out that you ran the Fire Blast correctly by the book. However, he believes pretty strongly, and I'd be curious for anybody else to weigh in on this. He believes pretty strongly that it might be an error, like an editing error in the stat block, that there's no basic save associated with it. He was like, automatic, no save, no attack roll, damaging effects that don't require a setup, such as rend or constrict, are extremely rare.
Even constrict, you get a save to half for half damage.
Oh, you do? Like, yeah. So, yeah, he didn't say constrict. I added that. But, yeah, like rend are extremely rare. And then he points out a place where it says these in the rule book where it says, quote, these abilities typically allow a basic saving throw. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. It's not in the book, you know, but he thinks it might be an actual typo because like that seemed and it seemed insane to me. You know, no roll, no save damage in an AoE fashion seems kind of overpowered.
Well, maybe it's because they can only do it every 1d4 rounds. I'm just trying to see.
Yeah, maybe. But like think about it. But that's how a dragon's breath weapon works. And that has a basic save, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, maybe this creature is very special, but I felt like, I think that's doubtful.
That's cool.
He also pointed out that the way Barnes's new ability, the mirror ability, was all done correctly. So that's a thumbs up for Matthew. And then let's move on to, this is interesting. Probably doesn't matter. So I didn't realize in Foundry, he's pointing out something in Foundry that I got to look into. You can add Bless in Foundry to your physical aura, and you can see the aura, and it will automatically give a +1 to characters, to tokens in that aura when they're rolling. Now, we don't roll digitally, so it doesn't matter as much, but at least visually, you would be able to see it, and I should only have to like click that I have Bless on. So anyway, I'm going to look into that.
That's cool.
That's obviously a spell that I'm going to continue to use. This one from YouTube, Soli Alpert, this was not from Professor Eric, said, magical healing of any kind counteracts the venom. I don't know if you noticed that or saw that, but magical healing of any kind. So Barnes should have lost that venom when Buggles healed him. I don't know. That was mental healing. I guess it's magical healing, but something that was pointed out from a listener.
For this particular creature?
Yeah, he said the Dessa's bubble venom. Any kind of magical healing counteracts that venom. Do you see that written in there anywhere?
I'm trying to bring it back up.
Take your time, and I'm going to move on to look at that.
Look at that. Good catch.
That's Soli Alpert.
Magical healing of any kind counteracts the
Good catch.
That's great.
Asta missed. Oh my gosh. Do you remember Asta critted and on the first one was 48 points of damage? Does this linger in your head anywhere? Because it was a massive hit. Dual wielding the katana, doubled
crazy,
the damage.
Crazy damage.
Add the spell on top, double that damage, 48 points of damage. And guess what? She undersold herself. And multiple comments about this on the video as well. She forgot the deadly D8 die on the katana. So another obviously D8, not a lot more damage. And obviously she killed the creature, so it had no impact on the story. But we got a reminder when she gets excited Holy about shit. Doubling her damage.
Dude, damage is crazy. I will never let her get off a spell strike again.
You said that after the episode. You were like, this is making me rethink the whole campaign. I'm going to start buffing up all these monsters.
Leave a character adjacent to her.
Yeah, that's really important. It's huge.
It's crazy.
Okay. All right, so there was a moment where Austin near the end, and Professor Eric pointed this out, and so did David Reuter on in the live chat during the episode, mentioned that her two hits seemed too high. She rolled a natty 19 and said she had a 31 to hit. There's no way she has a plus 12 bonus. And so this is the concern from Professor Eric, and he really wants to pass this on to everybody, is like, she was flanking, and so she may have added plus 2 to her attack, which is a 1E thing.
Who was that?
With Asta at the very end, when she killed the second one, she rolled a natty 19, and that she said that's a 31 to hit. That gives her a plus 12 to her attack,
yes,
which she should have, even with Bless and Runic Weapon, a plus 10 at this level. And so Professor Eric believes that she possibly added 2 for flanking, and that's a 1E thing, and Sydney plays 1E regularly with us on Legacy. And so the danger is, let's not double count off guard so that she's adding 2 and you're taking 2 away from the creature.
Yeah.
That would be very bad. So remember, the creature takes the penalty. You get no bonus to hit when you're flanking. So anyway, that's for everybody else out there. And I'll, of course, share that with Sydney. And then last one is just a positive from Professor Eric. In general, very satisfied, very satisfying to see more tactical play. Runic Weapon, Bless, flanking, and skirmishing from Zephyr, et cetera. And of course, finally having a non-higher level opponent helped. Still, it would be nice to see Stunning Fist land for once. It's such a good, always-on ability that Troy has rolled amazingly against all the time. These creatures had a low fort save and were more likely to fail than succeed. So I think Professor Eric was hoping for Zephyr to get a good Stunning Fist off, but it just didn't happen.
Dude, I have such low opinion of Stunning Fist because it was so useless in first edition.
And so expensive. Like, it was like once a day or something. It was some, like,
yeah, and you know, I played a couple months and I was just like, what, this ability is so dumb. So now I'm kind of carrying that over. I'm like, just stop wasting your time with Static Fist. But it's definitely better.
Yeah, it's definitely better because it's always on. Every single attack that you hit with the Flurry of Blows, you get the chance for it, and so that's awesome. All right, let's kick it to the Nash, a little listener mail.
It's time for listen to mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time to listen to mail.
All right, first off, we're going to go not with a question, but with a statement from at Jedi Roshi on YouTube, who said, it's finally happened for me. I started my GCP journey almost 2 years ago. Since then, I have been listening to every series when I get a chance. It took me 2 years to get through Giant Slayer, Strange Aeons, and now Gatewalkers, and is caught up for the first time with week-to-week episodes of the GCP. So welcome, Jedi Roshi. We've had lots of people comment on being there. Like, people will come to live shows and be like, I used to be able to just binge like one after another, and now I've caught up and I have to wait a week, and it is excruciating every week. But welcome, Jedi Roshi, to the fold.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. 2 years it took to get caught up on 8 years of the Glass Cannon podcast. Pretty wild.
Dude, I said we'd talk about Friday night. We never did talk about it. I just realized we burned through the news.
Yeah. The show. Yeah.
It's not really listener
let's take a quick break during listener mail. We can do it.
We did the Kong show.
At
the new stand-up New York Kong Skull Island.
Yes.
And it was so much fucking fun. I went long. I imagine that they'll never have us back because I went super long. But
the staff was just like,
great crowd, really cool new space right in, I mean, the heart of Times Square. I didn't realize because I didn't Google the map until I was coming in. I was like, oh shit, this is like, I used to work a block away bartending for years and we were right in it. And
right in the heart of Times Square.
And then they had this after party that we went to, and it was a bunch of like just great Nash members there, like most of which I'd never met before. A couple of people we've seen at some of the New York shows. Just a fucking great, great time.
Yeah, it was a great hang. I was so burnt and exhausted after the show. You were so exhausted right before the show. You were like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. Like, I've been up since 5 in the morning. I'm exhausted. I'm so tired. And obviously, the adrenaline kicks in. We do the show, go to the after party, and I'm just like, all right, I'll have a drink. I'll say hi to a few people, and then I'm going to bed because I am so burnt out. Everyone left before we did. We closed down the after party. I don't know what happens to us. Like, how do we get that extra level of energy at the end of the night? It's crazy.
Yeah, that was
I don't know
wild.
Where it comes from, but that was a really, day. Really fun time.
Sorry, I said we'd talk about it. We never talked about
it. Yeah.
I hope we get to do it again because also I love playing that game.
Oh my gosh. Like, I feel like we're going to see more of this at some time or another. We got to just get an ep on here of like, I think I had so many properties and it's just so fun. You're just like creating a movie basically from scratch in 2 hours.
It felt like a movie. It was fucking great.
God, it was awesome. Okay, let's get back to listening now. Just a couple of quick ones here, and then we'll get you on your way. Andrew Yu from Roseville, Minnesota? Yeah, MN is Minnesota, right?
Yeah, we just left there.
Yeah, Andrew Yu from Roseville, Minnesota writes in and says, what's the difference between John Jonski and John Jamski? Please use examples.
I'll help out. There's no difference.
Andrew Yu, there is no difference between the three of them. In fact, I would be curious if over time, any listeners, any vigilant or insightful listeners could potentially draw out any consistency of, like, particularly John Jamski. If I use it in specific situations, unlike John, I think John and Jonski are completely transferable or interchangeable, rather. John Jamski, perhaps I reserve for maybe like, no, I don't. I can't think of anything that narrows it down. I really think they are always anything and they are all interchangeable. So anyway, go out there and go nuts with the John Jamski, whenever you want. Have fun with it. All right. So Troy from British Columbia, Victoria, British Columbia, where a lot of people from Victoria came to the Vancouver show and were like, yo, Victoria is way better. This one from Troy. Do you ever find yourself experiencing exhaustion from long-term campaigns? I absolutely love long-term campaigns, but I keep finding interest from my players. Keeping interest from all my players quite challenging. Troy, have you experienced this yourself at all? Kind of a midpoint where you're like, I don't even want to play this story anymore.
I feel like we've talked about this recently on Cannon Fodder, and maybe just a different phrase.
Maybe it was in
question.
A different way, or maybe I'm repeating the same question. I don't think so, but I hope I'm
you
not.
You are. But I mean, it's worth revisiting. I think we talked about, dude, like less than a month ago, about like campaign fatigue. Is it the same question that you're recycling? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't see this guy's name in a second one. Maybe it just came up in a different way, but yeah.
We definitely talked about this, but I'm happy to re-talk about it because what I was going to say was like trying to find that sweet spot for what we do now is I'm still not sure like what is the right amount of episodes. There's something so epic about what we did with Giant Slayer that it would be intriguing to do it again and see like, man, can we do it again? Like another 300 something episodes. Cause you take COVID away, it would have been probably, 50, what is that? Like six-ish years. Mm-hmm. I'm also excited to see what's probably going to be somewhere around 160, 170 episodes for the 3-book AP. I don't know. I don't know. But that's not really answering the question. But again, I think we already answered it. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like
play
we never
fun
got
anymore.
Tired.
We just like, play for a show. Which
I feel
is
like
still
we
fun.
Never got tired of Jade Regent. I feel like we got tired of Giant Slayer in book 5.
Yeah.
At a certain point, but then it got reinvigorated. There were some events that really triggered a reinvigoration in that campaign. I don't think that there was anything you particularly did to recapture interest. I think it was just the organic flow of the story you know, there were changes that happened, character death, that kind of thing, that just shoot some life into a story. And I think that that just kind of happened organically. I haven't experienced too much campaign fatigue. I feel like I also love long-term campaigns. I think keeping players interested is, it's just about changing the goals and the encounters that they're facing, you know, at a relatively even clip should keep, you know, the interest going. I think that was where some of the lag and drag happened with Giant Slayer, was there was a repetitiveness to encounters, particularly, that really highlighted how this was all kind of the same and we were still doing the same thing. But, you know, if you think about the first three books, I mean, they're so wildly different. You know, you have like a siege on a village into like a boat adventure into like a swamp adventure into like another plane, you know, and then into then we're sieging a fort. You know what I mean? Like it's interesting kind of flow. And then book four is on top of the mountain. So that was like the
Skier guard.
The surveilling and then it was like an insurgency, right? Like we were trying to destroy their morale by being unseen, but like slowly pitting the giants against each other. So there was a lot of variety in that. I think that that's why Pathfinder adventure paths are so awesome that they have. I mean, Adventure Path is a copyrighted name that is just Paizo Adventures that is now being used as a word that just means campaign, you know? But that's not what they are. The way they've paced them out so that a long campaign is six different books by different authors, it's going to generate that kind of complete change of scenery and goals and tone that I think is hard for a homebrew GM to do over a 5 or 6 year period, because you're writing everything. How do you make it change? How do you make it different so that your players don't start falling into a routine? You know,
I'll tell you what we don't have fatigue with, and that's Masks of Nyarlathotep.
Yeah.
I mean, they want me to start recording season 3 like this week. I'm like, I need a break. Troy needs a break.
Yeah.
But not because I'm I am fatigued, but it's a different kind of fatigue. It's like the prep fatigue.
Right.
But I'm certainly not fatigued with the adventure, you know. But if you feel like you're fatigued, that's when you need to change it up, you know, insert a little bit of yourself, go off the beaten path if you're playing something pre-written, and or just take things in a wild new direction if it's something you're homebrewing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to keep interest from all players, but if it's just one player in particular that is a consistent problem, that might be more that's the player's problem.
Right.
You know, like don't change your stuff too much if most of your players seem to be engaged and enjoying it. But yeah, it happens to the best of us. And I think it is way more likely to happen when you're writing your own campaign. So look to other sources, look to other modules as inspiration.
Yeah.
Even in the middle of your homebrew, go ahead and take a six level one shot and run it as like kind of a side adventure just to reignite the spark or something like that. You know, guise it in the facade of your world, but just use those mechanics or that story or whatever. I mean, remember in Jade Region, we had so much fun eschewing the caravan mechanic in favor of a fan-generated mystery at some village along the way.
It was a third-party adventure that was written to slot in to part two of book one of Jade Region. And I was just... And I was very, very new to GMing. And I was like, this caravan mechanic sucks.
Yes.
But I want to do an adventure here. And they had written it and you just had to change the names. Like it was very clear who they were talking about the characters that were in it. And it was a great little, you know, side quest that, you know, we played over like maybe 3 sessions.
Yeah. Remember, but you like you ended up really caring about these people, this village, whatever. And then you finished and you were like, I'm glad we could help. But now we must continue our journey, you know, and it was very cool. And we were back on the path of Jade Regent and we did away with one of the more boring parts in terms of the reviews of that book. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, staying flexible like that is important and is definitely going to keep interest in your game.
For sure.
That's all I got for today, good buddy. You have anything? Yeah, we're keeping it short. Actually, we're not short. Jesus, these FODs. Man, they fly by. Too long. There was a lot of We Are Stupid this week.
We're real dumb.
But it was definitely some good analysis. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out. Thanks for chilling with us. Remember, lots of streams this week. If you're listening to this early or at like midnight or 9 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, like, come and check out the iconic characters mini creation stream, 11 a.m. Today, Wednesday, June 5th, on our Twitch channel. Then tonight, 8 p.m., premiere of Vancouver show. And then tomorrow, Thursday, 12 p.m., I'm streaming live on the Twitch channel. The Control adventure continues. Supposed to be one of the best levels ever in any video game. It's supposed to be amazing. And then, obviously, Glass Cannon's back Thursday night, 8 o'clock. More to talk about next week on Fodder. It's going to be awesome. Until then, take it easy, everybody. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time. Have a good weekend. Bye.
I just peed my pants.
Gross. Film it.
See this?
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.
Welcome to a journey into the heart of the Texas Renaissance Festival, the nation's largest and rowdiest celebration of medieval fantasy. But what lurks beneath the facade of tights and turkey legs? Well, we dove deep into the empire to uncover a history marred by mystery and misconduct, murders, assaults, and other crimes that tarnish its legacy. This isn't just a fairy tale. It's a cautionary tale of power, fantasy, and the consequences that follow when they all collide. Search for Crime Waves Renaissance Texas on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.